Yeah, that's fine.
Blog Talk Radio.
Live, folks. You are listening to another edition of This Week in Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm your co-host, Greg Masters, and joined, as always, is my sidekick and partner, is Dr. Pat Salver. Pat, are you with us?
I am, Greg. Glad to be here.
And Pat's joining us from San Francisco today. She's up there hanging out and reporting at the Health 2.0 Refactored Conference, which I understand was an interesting experience.
Yeah, it's actually Mountain View in the Silicon Valley.
Oh, Mountain View. Okay, good. Well, they're spreading the wealth around up there. Health 2.0 is going to be in Mountain View as well. So let's get into our program today. We're delighted. We get a chance to talk with Rob McCray. Rob McCray is an industry veteran, a man of rich experience, and I just love his demeanor. He's calm and collected and cool all the time in the midst of lots of stuff swirling around him. He's got a rather unique perch as the CEO and president of the Wireless Life Sciences Alliance, and he's going to tell us a little bit about himself, WLSA, and the upcoming Convergent Summit in San Diego here later this month. So, Rob, are you on the line?
I'm right here. Good afternoon.
Excellent. So, really happy you could join us. So, I'm going to just turn to you, Rob. Talk to us about you personally, your involvement historically, and then your role at WLSA. Then tell us a little bit about WLSA, and then we'll pivot into the Convergent Summit.
Okay, we'll go wherever you want, and you use that nice nice term, veteran. That covers a multitude of sins, doesn't it, or a multiple of years. And I am head of the Wireless Life Sciences Alliance, or the WLSA, and we have been doing that since 2005. But it followed on about 5 years of work when I came out of other healthcare service activities as advisor and as CEO and as investor, and a brief interlude in digital music at the turn of the millennium. And we started working on this convergence of digital telecommunications and healthcare, looking for ways to improve quality and efficiency and workflow within healthcare systems. So I've been doing that basically since the last 13 or 14 years. And I think of note, maybe, and you've mentioned my demeanor, but other things that I care about, I'm also chair of a foundation, a healthcare foundation called Alliance Healthcare Foundation. It's a private charity. It's focused on leveraging our resources to improve the care and the health and the well-being of the underserved in our region. And it's a 20-year-old organization that has focused on a population that has all the same problems as the rest of us who are well-insured or wealthy, except they're more acute because the safety net is very frayed right now.
Actually, I believe that's when our paths first crossed at that Alliance for Health conference, maybe 5-6 years ago here in San Diego. So I was talking with Pat before you joined us that we were talking about WLSA as being, if not the granddaddy of conferences in the space, certainly in that first class. There's a whole lot of activity and some might say noise out there in the digital health and life sciences space. But were you the founding CEO with WLSA, or did you have a predecessor?
No, I never had a CEO for the first 5 years. My colleague Don Jones, who is at Qualcomm now, and I created it, and it was created in order to do one invitational meeting for about 120 executives from the technology, communications, and healthcare sectors. I'll say, and that was half of them didn't know why we wanted them together. We came together once a year and did a meeting and then did our regular work and kind of fostered the community beyond, outside of any trade organization. And so we didn't have a CEO until 2010, and that's when I did step up to devote more of my own personal time to it. We created a second conference focused on the research communities and, started to ramp up our activity.
So, Rob, this is Pat. So it sounds like you've been there really since the beginning, that you were, if not the first, one of the first of these kinds of meetings. And now, of course, they're proliferating all over the place and drawing pretty big audiences. And it seems like the interest and the appetite for digital health is increasing. Actually, it feels very frothy from your long-term perspective. How do you think things are going now, or is the movement or the industry or whatever you want to call it on the right track in your opinion?
Well, you used the word noisy, and that's a great one because I refer to this space as noisy. In the early years, so from 1999 and through our first meeting or two, it was very quiet, and we would have to kind of metaphorically look around the world for innovative smaller companies and entrepreneurs to bring together with some of these larger enterprises that were becoming interested in the space. Now it's just the opposite. It's hard to separate the signal from the noise in wireless, mobile, connected, digital, electronic health. Whatever adjective you want to put on the front end of it. And so I think, in general, that's good. There's certainly a broad awareness now among a lot of stakeholders that there are benefits in applying technologies from other sectors to the delivery of healthcare. I think that's all good. I think the noise, has a role to play. In the near term, it may actually make it more difficult for the quality offerings to, find market traction because, too many choices in a new sector become, confusing, and confused buyers don't purchase. So, near term, that's a problem. Long term, I think it's good to get more people involved in this space.
Well, that's an interesting perspective. One of the questions that has come up for me over the last couple of weeks that I'd like to be able to ask you is, a lot of the innovation that we're seeing in this space is coming out of, three 20-year-olds and a 22-year-old woman going, the back room, and they say, well, we want to save lives, we want to, fix American healthcare, and they come up with a solution, and they're just generating tons and tons of solutions. But recently, I've had several people say to me, this is probably not the right way to do it. What we really need is for the large enterprise systems in healthcare, the health plans, the hospital systems, ACOs, whatever. But these enterprises to articulate the problem and then reach out to good designers to design the solution. Do you have any feelings about which is the right way to go?
Well, okay, there are two or three different things going on here. One, it's really easy to write software and write code for mobile applications, and there are stores, online stores, iTunes, and the Android marketplace where you can distribute this software to millions of people around the world. And that's what a lot of those references are to. And that's where it is wild, wild west with very cheap or free apps, not quality checked, no validation of quality, reliability, no balance sheet supporting them. And most of that just it over time it just goes away. But I some of that will stick. Some of those people that do that will, the next time around, they'll get it right. They'll learn. They'll find out what they don't know. You know, a 26-year-old engineering grad is not going to, who's never been in an emergency room, is not going to write a software application that's going to fix, you know, the emergency room. But they may in the future. So I think that's good as long as you don't get distracted by it. Going to your second question or premise, I don't think that the solutions are going to come from the large enterprise players that have, you know, major stakes today in healthcare, IT, and devices, or from the payers. I think those can all be acquirers, they can be investors, but, you know, especially for HIT, well, for the healthcare system as a whole, if we're successful in connected health, we are going to downsize that industry. And, you know, people don't want to spend more on healthcare. They don't want to go to the hospital. They don't want to go to the clinic. They don't want to see specialists. They just have to in order to get back to, you know, a state of well-being or well enough being, you know, that they consider to be healthy. So I don't think the industry is going to downsize itself. The auto industry didn't do that to itself. The music industry didn't do that to itself. Financial industry didn't downsize itself. It was technology-enabled solutions that were driven by a combination of insiders and outsiders that made those changes. Retail commerce wasn't transformed by department stores. It was transformed by, you know, Amazon and eBay. So I think the same thing's starting, you know, will happen to healthcare.
So you're subscribing to perhaps the creative destruction theory that Clayton Christensen, or more recently written by Eric Topol in The Creative Destruction of Medicine, that it will come from the outside.
It's a combination of the two. I mean, I used to talk a lot about, you know, kind of look. I like to look at other industries that have gone through some form of transformation, and some of them have been because of digital technologies. And which are directly applicable to others because of, you know, other technology improvements. And in each case, I think you find that when a new business sector is created, and that is what is happening, I believe, in connected health, it is a combination of players from, you know, a few incumbents that may or may not be, you know, central to the status quo. You know, embrace and support, invest in, you know, acquire the new approaches. And then lots of entrepreneurs and innovators from outside come in to, you know, kind of create the concepts and try to run with them. And some of them work. And so, you know, I think of digital music, because I spent some time there. You know, the music industry didn't fix itself. It didn't respond to the opportunities of digital music, of MP3 technology, of massive file sharing, and turned itself from an industry dependent on distributing, you know, plastic with, you know, plastic albums to retail, to one that distributes and sells individual songs, you know, in a digital format directly. It didn't do it by itself. It was somebody else that, you know, did it to them. There was a whole lot of people and a lot of technologies that did that. It was the internet. So, you know, the same thing applies here. The U.S. automobile industry didn't turn itself from an industry that, you know, sold cars that were, you know, poor quality and unsafe and highly inefficient into one that, you know, today has automobiles that, you know, are on a par with, you know, the best from Europe and Japan until it was, you know, it was downsized. it was, you know, combination of external factors and government standards that forced that industry to, you know, to upgrade and to meet the competition. That makes sense?
Yeah, it
totally
does make sense. And it's actually you're making my head spin here as I'm trying to think, and maybe you can tell me some examples of the kinds of innovations that you think have the possibility of doing the same thing in the healthcare industry. What do you think are one or two really innovative approaches that could perhaps really disrupt?
Okay. All right. Well, then, okay. So I'll start at the top of my list. And the most disruptive innovation is to focus on health as the goal, not healthcare. We in this country has been talking about healthcare for a long time, and it's always healthcare centric. We spend too much. We're not getting enough returns. Chronic disease is going up, despite the fact that we spend more and more money. Examine Medicare spending by state, and you discern that the more Medicare spends in the state, the lower the quality of outcomes. And healthcare. So the concept has been, well, healthcare has to fix itself. We have to do something as regulators, as payers for Medicare and Medicaid programs. We have to fix this, more coverage, but under tighter and tighter rules, change the rules a little bit. There's the notion that this fellow Leonard Kish articulated, and it's been picked up quite a bit, that patient engagement is the blockbuster drug of the century. And, you know, there's a lot of the industry focused on patient engagement as a way to, you know, enhance adherence to therapeutic regimens of all sorts, and we will have lots of healthcare benefits, you know, even before getting into kind of patient engagement with their own weight and weight management and activity and so forth. I have a different perspective. I think that engaged health consumers are the blockbuster drug of the century. And the most transformative concept is to change our notions of what health means and how you get it. And engaging the retail consumer sector in selling health, that's what will actually disrupt healthcare more than any of the tech-enabled solutions that we're talking about. Because, you know, if roughly half of our disease burden is driven by lifestyle and behavior, that's the half that is addressable, and there's no other, you know, single disease or therapy or innovation that will attack that much of the healthcare burden.
So it's really interesting, because a lot of the behavior change that people need to make is going to require, in my opinion, and you can push back on me if you don't agree, but it's really going to require some public health intervention, because I'm not exercising, not necessarily because I'm lazy, but maybe because my neighborhood's unsafe and there's no walking paths. I'm not eating, you know, fast food because, you know, I want to be fat and unhealthy, but it's the most affordable or maybe the most accessible in my neighborhood. Do you think that this need to focus on health instead of healthcare could perhaps spark a renaissance and a rejuvenation or a reinvigoration of our approaches to public health?
Well, but public health, again, is that sort of a healthcare-y thing. And let's look at smoking. Smoking rates are about half of what they were at their peak in the, you know, just after World War II. And a couple of things have happened. You know, we increased taxes on cigarettes. That helps. We adopted, starting in the 80s, restrictions on where people could smoke. But the other thing we did is we changed our cultural attitude about smoking. And there was specific efforts going on in California after Prop 99, which was the first tobacco tax initiative that we had out there, there were specific efforts to get television and movie producers and writers to not put smoking in their scenes. And the Hollywood community picked up on this, and they stopped smoking. And they led the community. That changed attitudes. Smoking wasn't cool. So a lot of people, over time, either didn't start it or they stopped it. And that's a really powerful force in our culture. Is consumer attitudes and cultures driven by lots of things, entertainment of all sorts, typical times, sports, all that. So we can we can address them. Drunk driving is another example. I like to use the automobile industry as a source of sort of wisdom or observation. Especially when I'm talking to healthcare people who think, well, we can't really fix all of this, can't change. And, the auto industry is one that is highly regulated. It's highly dependent on government investment and infrastructure. It doesn't work without, efficiently without some standardization. And, look at car safety, in deaths per miles driven, car efficiency and fuel efficiency specifically, the convenience, quality, and comfort of automobiles over, 40-year period from the 60s to the 2000s. And you'll find that at a constant cost in real dollars, cars got much, much safer, far fewer deaths, much more efficient, and much more fun to drive and have more creature comforts. So compare a Volkswagen Bug of the 60s that a college student might have with a low-end Toyota Prius of today, and those cost about the same in the real dollars. Which one would you have? And so, but part of that was great technology, but a lot of the decrease in or increase in safety is because drunk driving went from something that was culturally acceptable to, I'd say today, not acceptable as part of our culture. It still happens.
I'm completely with you. I guess I incorporate those as a part of what I think of as what public health used to be. Private sector, it may be in the advocacy sector, but it's still, in a sense, applying those, let's get to the root causes, if attitudes and acceptability and all those things are a part of the problem, let's try and change those.
Yeah, I get that, and I love the public health sector. But I guess if I wanted to convince teenage girls that they don't have to be stick thin to be attractive to boys or girls, I would rather have Lady Gaga giving that message. She's a little old now, but I'll say Lady Gaga, then, a public health nurse or surgeon general. It has to be somebody who's cool, somebody that's somebody not outside of healthcare, because kids don't care about health and healthcare. People, most of us, aren't focused on health. We don't think long-term like that. Kids are about what's cool, what's sexy, what will, make them feel better, what will make them higher in the pecking order in their high school. The ghetto kids, when Air Jordans came out and you had them, back when it cost, it was $100 was an expensive pair of basketball shoes. You had kids who where did they get $100? They couldn't afford it, but they would find some way to get those shoes because what? Made them feel better, made them have a little higher social status. People make these decisions about what they spend their money on, what they do, smoking, drinking, and even I think the food they eat, based on the signals that they get from the culture. And the culture is driven more by the consumer and entertainment sector than by the healthcare sector. So that's my premise. And that's what I'm going after. Right? It's get the consumer sector focusing on this market and figuring out how to sell more products, services, applications, and lifestyles that lead to a healthy outcome for yourself and your family. Then I think we can go get somewhere.
May I step in?
Oh, go ahead, Greg.
I just wanted. So I might this be might a headline here be breaking news? Rob McRae, forget the healthcare industry. You know, it's hopeless. Let's focus on the social engineering of prevention and health and wellness.
No.
All right. So,
I'm not forgetting healthcare. I love it. It just really bothers me when trusted institutions fail to adopt technology-enabled workflow improvements, and that's what's come out of the core of our effort. Are those tech-enabled solutions for, you know, core problems in inpatient and outpatient healthcare? I think the consumer movement, to use that term, what's beyond healthcare, is a separate but overlapping, you know, concept. And maybe that's the next chapter, Greg. But I'm not giving up on the first one because we're finally getting there. We're chipping away at some of the payment rules. We're changing some of the financial incentives so that it starts to make sense for healthcare institutions to actually invest in these technologies. And the technologies have gotten to the point where they can deliver, you know, more immediate, value and improvement. They're not so complex or uncertain as to their benefits. So I'm not going to give up on that one, but I do think there's actually more to win in the long run by focusing on people as consumers, as citizens, and therefore looking at how you change influence their decisions.
Great, Rob. So we're coming up about 3 minutes left in the live portion of the broadcast. Let's talk about the Convergence Summit. Why don't you give us some highlights? Anything we should be looking forward to this year? What's top of mind for you? What about the iAwards candidates? Looks pretty impressive to me.
Well, it's a great group. I haven't counted them. Last year we had 70, I think, different people on the stage during the 2 days, you know, for anywhere from, you know, 3 minutes to 30 minutes. And we'll do something similar to that today. It will include some of the biggest companies in the world, like, you know, AT&T and Sanofi, to startups that no one's heard of yet, like TicTrac and Duo Fertility or Cambridge Temperature Concepts. And, you know, a lot of them in between. We will be discussing the engaged health consumer from a variety of ways. We have a panel led by Jeff Arnold, who the founder of WebMD, focusing on the engaged health consumer. Jim Fowler, Professor James Fowler, or Jimmy Jam, when he went on the Colbert Show, will be part of that to discuss, yeah. And along with Danny Kraft from, you know, Singularity and you know, one of these young MD kind of futurist thought leaders. We'll showcase a number of other companies as well as, talk about what's happening in the real world. You know, Body Media, Chris Robbins from Body Media will be back. And, they were just bought by Jawbone, and that's an example of a consumer company that is focusing on the health market. And they, you know, made a good acquisition, the clinical-grade technology that they're going to put to use, that is being put to use in the consumer market. So it's a big menu, a lot of different themes, a lot of different types of people, but they're all senior level. No one's selling anyone else. You don't have messages from our sponsors with boring PowerPoint slides. It's fast moving. And it's all intended to enhance the opportunities for personal interactions because we keep it to about 275 people, as you know. and you can find real people to have real conversations with to start, continue, or conclude something that leads to a real life business transaction or offering.
Okay, Rob, so, I appreciate that. I didn't want to interrupt you there, but we've gone into our overtime segment. We had a hard stop at 3:30, but it's if you have a moment or two, maybe we could close this out.
Sure.
As I was reviewing the iAwards finalist group, which is moderated by Chris Hoffman, Senior Director, Chief Marketing Officer at Tripletree. Between AliveCor, Asmopolis, you got some real crowd favorites there in terms of really, really exciting technology and applications. And then if you tick down this list, there's a few that I've never heard of before. Neither Pat nor I were aware of some of these names. And then, of course, the eye pops at Qualcomm Life, because one thinks of Qualcomm, they don't think of startup, so there's a really eclectic batch of players there.
Yeah, I mean, it's never been all about startups. I mean, that the predecessor to the iAward program was, I started in 2007, was the investor meeting that back then I kept separate and distinct from the Convergence Summit, because there wasn't enough investment activity going on, and I just wanted to keep the CEOs separate and from the investor community. So, you go back to those days, and we showcased Body Media back then, and Bianca Med, which is acquired by ResMed, we also showcased the offerings of some of the larger companies. It hasn't always been about small companies. So it's been a mix, but we have a good group this year, and good quality, a lot of evidence supporting a number of them, and I'm pleased with the outcome. I do not any longer play a role in the selection of the finalists. I used to. I certainly did when before the iAward program, Don and I basically figured out who to showcase, but now Tripletree really does run that process.
So last question for you. I know you're busy, but last year there was a rather significant announcement by Nokia on the sensing challenge for biometric sensors. Can you preview anything we might expect this year that you can actually talk about?
No, I have no plan. None that I can talk about. I have my fingers crossed for a couple of announcements, with respect to good activities in our members. Sorry, I can't satisfy your curiosity.
No secrets to disclose
right now. Yeah, well, one, if I know that the announcement's going to be made, obviously you got to wait, or else it's out there and to some extent, there's just still some uncertainties. And people are saying they're working on it, and if they can get certain things done, they will be able to make the announcement there and want to do it. But, we don't control all the timing of that.
Well, Pat, do you have any final thoughts for Rob?
Only to say that I'm really looking forward to attending the conference, and particularly looking forward to learning more about all of these finalists for the iAward.
Well, yeah, it'll be great. It'll be great to have you down, and I think you'll be intrigued by some of the other new companies that in the agenda or that you meet, because there's a lot of new ones coming in that I think have something going for them.
Well, Rob, unless you have any final thoughts, that will be the last word for our broadcast today.
My only final thought is one thing I didn't mention, and that is we are doing an interactive session, and actually I hope both of you will actually participate, step out of your media roles, because we're going to do a session that's not going to be a skills-based session. It's going to be a session focused on defining themes that actually better describe the benefits of connected health to one of nine targets, you know, consumers to clinicians to regulators to investors to institutions to payers to so and so forth. And, you know, it struck us that we have a very committed, very intelligent group of people in our summits, and let's do something that feels to me a little bit like going out on a tightrope, because a lot of people don't like these interactive sessions, but I think it's going to be something that is fun, engaging, and you know, perhaps we'll come up with those themes that I have a hard time thinking up by myself. So hope you will do that.
Well,
great.
I won't
sounds
speak
like
to
fun.
Pat. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. So I'm in. So again,
okay.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you so much, Rob, for your
thanks,
time
Rob.
Today. We've
my
been
pleasure.
Speaking with Rob McRae, the CEO and president of the Wireless Life Sciences Alliance. WLSA is holding their annual Convergence Summit, the 8th annual, here in San Diego later this month. May 28th is a members-only session, and then the open at-large for the public is on the 29th and 30th. So if you haven't had, if you have time, you haven't made the commitment yet, you can go to their website, WLSA.org. Let's see. Let me make sure I get this right. It's wirelesslifesciences.org, wirelesslifesciences.org. Or you can check out our blog post on the Convergence Summit at hibc.tv. So for my partner, Pat Salber, for Rob McRae, as Greg Masters saying, thank you for listening, and we'll see you in San Diego, everybody. Take care. Bye now.